Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Scumbags, this is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
Ellie, I'm so thrilled because we've got one of our favourite guests back on the sofa, back within the bosom of Scummy Mummies. It is the delightful, the wonderful, the ever-inspiring Rosamund Dean.
Oh, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming, because last time we had you on, it was to talk about your book about mindful drinking.
Yes.
Which is obviously a subject very close to my heart. But you've done another book, Rosamund. What's that about?
So this one is about breast cancer.
Oh, jolly.
Jolly.
Yeah.
It's full of laughs.
Chicklet.
Yeah. It's full of lols.
It's a graphic novel. One for kids.
So it's called Reconstruction, How to Rebuild Your Body, Mind and Life After a Breast Cancer Diagnosis. And I wrote it after my own experience of going through breast cancer diagnosis and treatment and out the other side. So I am now cancer free.
Oh,
hooray!
Congratulations. I feel like, aren't you supposed to ring a bell or something? Have we got a bell? Should we go?
I've got
a bell pepper.
Yeah.
We could knock it with a spoon or something.
Yes, I think that would be nice. That would be fitting with your whole new wellness, your new healthy life post-cancer.
I'm always hitting peppers with spoons.
Oh, can't move for peppers at Rosamund's house. But it's been a recent journey, this whole thing, because what you found out about the cancer early 2021,
yes.
You found a lump in at Christmas time. Jolly.
Yes. Oh, happy Christmas.
And that was 2020. And I've been reading your book this week, and you went through cancer during the pandemic.
Yes.
Which is fucking fucked.
Mm.
And really, I mean, cancer is hard.
I mean, it's not great at the best of times.
No, exactly right. But this was an extra element of fuckery.
Yeah. And it was that. It was that lockdown in January, February, in winter 2021, where it was. I think it was the third national
it was the
lockdown.
Worst. It was the it worst.
Was
the
everyone worst. Was sad. I mean, the novelty, any novelty had completely worn off.
Yeah.
God knows what it's like for people who are actually working in the hospitals, of course, and all that. Like, absolutely just horrendous all round. And then along comes some cancer just to make it extra nice for you.
Exactly. Well, the first lockdown, I remember people hadn't really got the hang of homeschooling, and the weather was nice.
The weather was gorgeous.
We were just kind of hanging out. Obviously trying to do our full-time jobs at the same time, but there was an element of it felt like just all hanging out. Whereas in that lockdown, it was like full-on homeschooling. But everything was shut and the weather was bleak, and it was just so depressing.
Yeah.
A grim time.
I know what would make that better. Cancer. Yes, please.
So you found the lump. I also found a lump this year, which turned out to be nothing. But what went through your mind when you found that lump?
To be honest, all that went through my mind was, I guess this is what happens after you've turned 40. I had just turned 40, and I thought this is probably one of those hormonal things. Like, I obviously Googled it right away, breast lump, and it said almost all breast lumps are hormonal, or they're cysts, and it's almost always nothing to worry about. And I completely assumed it was that. I didn't
Oh, so you were able to go down that route of that's, yeah,
I was not, I'm not normally a catastrophizer. I'm normally very kind of rational.
I've always said that about you, Rosamund. She's so rational.
And I didn't think it was anything to worry about. And even when I went to the doctor and she referred me to the breast clinic, And I said to Jonathan, I still don't think it's anything to worry about. And I went in there and had the mammogram, and they said, you need an ultrasound, set up the ultrasound. And then they said, we're going to do a biopsy. And I remember sitting in the waiting room Googling how many breast biopsies turn out to be cancer. And it was still hardly any. It was still really? Quite a low percentage. Mm. And I was like, this is fine. And I texted Jonathan apologising for taking longer than I thought I was going to. But I was really like, this is fine. I didn't think for a second it was going to be cancer.
Mm.
I was like, I don't have cancer. I feel fine.
Yeah.
I'm completely healthy. I just thought of people with cancer as being kind of ill and, you know, fragile and, you know, thin and weak and just ill. That was, I guess, how people with cancer are portrayed in films.
Obviously, I had
no clue.
Yeah.
And, I had no symptoms other than the lump.
Mm. So then when you got the diagnosis, was that, I mean, that must have been a massive shock.
Yeah, it was. It was a massive shock. And I feel like, looking back, because I handled it really well. I was like, okay, this is happening. This is the treatment. This is what we need to do. I kind of called around everyone. I was all very practical and matter-of-fact about it. Mm. And looking back, I think I was just in shock. Because I didn't really have a meltdown about it until much, much later. Probably, I was going to say towards the end of treatment, but actually about halfway through treatment, I definitely that was when the meltdown started, I think.
Yeah.
I went into it with quite a positive, optimistic...
Quite practical, because I've got this theory that we've talked about before, that there's two kinds of people when crisis happens, right? This is based on a thing Brené Brown said, but I've obviously stolen it. I mean, developed it into my own thing. I think there's clipboard people and there's duvet people. So some people, when there's a disaster, they're like, right, get my clipboard, and they're assigning tasks and they're going, these are the 10 things we're going to do and this is the order we're going to do them. At 11:05 we're going to have some radiotherapy, and then by 14:69 we'll be cured, you know. And like, you know, the duvet people are like, oh, I'm just going to get under the duvet and pull the duvet up and hope it's not happening.
Yeah.
And I feel like everyone I know naturally falls into, and I don't think one's better than the other, because you know, the duvet people are just avoiding the shit that they have to deal with eventually, but the clipboard people eventually burn out because they're not really dealing with the mental shit that's going on.
They're avoiding it in a different way,
right? Exactly.
Really, because that's definitely me. I'm definitely a clipboard person, and I was like, this is how we're dealing with all the practical elements of this. And I think in kind of focusing on all of those stops you focusing on how shit you feel about it.
Yeah.
I think maybe you need to have a few days under the duvet before you can...
Would you do it differently, knowing kind of what you know now?
I would definitely do lots of things differently. I don't think I could really change my personality and approach it differently. I mean, there are lots of things along the way that I wish I'd known about sooner. Like, that, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, because it was only when I'd kind of met the cancer community through, in my case, it was through social media, because we were in the pandemic, so they didn't have the in-person support groups and all those, you know, meetups at the Maggie Centre and Macmillan, and all those organisations which hold those amazing groups. None of those were happening because everything was online.
Yeah.
So it was through Instagram that I met people who were going through the same thing or had been through the same thing. And they would say to me, oh, have you tried this? Have you done that? Have you tried blah, blah, blah? And that advice, I definitely wish I'd known about sooner.
Right. So the more anecdotal stuff, if you like, of people actually going for it rather than the doctor, like the leaflets and the textbooks, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, because the doctors, I at the beginning thought I didn't need any additional information. The doctor would tell me what I need to do. Anything else is just superfluous. It's unnecessary for me to know. I just want to focus on what my doctor says. And then it was only while going through it that I realised there's a lot of stuff the doctor just doesn't talk to you about, because it's just not really there.
What sort of stuff?
So, for instance, if you have... not everybody who has breast cancer has chemotherapy, but if you do, then obviously there are lots of side effects of chemo that are very uncomfortable and very... quite soul-destroying, the physical... side effects in terms of hair loss, because you don't just lose the hair in your head, it's also your eyebrows and eyelashes, and just the way you look just totally changes because you're on steroids as well. Mm. So you kind of like go all puffy and shiny, so you've got no hair, you're all puffy and shiny, and you feel awful as well. Just you feel sick all the time and just so exhausted. The fatigue is insane. Mm. It's like early stages of pregnancy, like times 100, where you're like, I just want to, I'm just going to lie on the sofa for 5 minutes and next thing you know, it's the next day. It's, you know.
So how did you get through all that? What were the things that helped you get through that?
So there were, oh my goodness, there are so, so many. It's like a million little things rather than like one magic bullet thing. In terms of chemotherapy, one thing that I wish I'd known is that you don't have to take all the drugs. So I don't mean the chemo drugs. Obviously, you have to take all of those.
Yes.
Those are important. Take all of the chemo. I mean the drugs around the chemo. So they send you home with bags of drugs, of anti-sickness pills, laxatives, because anti-sickness pills cause constipation, steroids, but then also sleeping pills, because the steroids cause insomnia. And they also give you these injections, like inject yourself in the tummy to boost your neutrophil count, because your neutrophils, that's your white blood cells, your immune cells, they have to be at a certain level in order for you to be able to have chemo, for your body to tolerate it. So they give you those injections to kind of boost your immune cells. So you, all these drugs around it, I didn't, nobody had kind of said to me, oh, you know, if you make this ginger drink and cut these things and don't try and force down your coffee because it's what you've always had, then you might not feel as sick. And then maybe you can reduce the anti-sickness pills, and then, you know, if you go for a walk and eat more veg, then you can reduce the laxatives, and the steroids they give them to you every time you go, but actually the steroids are to reduce the risk of an allergic reaction, and once you've had a few cycles of chemo, that risk reduces anyway. So you can also reduce the steroids after a certain amount of time. There are lots of sleep hygiene things you can do, obviously, to improve your sleep and reduce the sleeping pills. And there are so many things you can do to boost your immunity rather than injecting yourself in the stomach. But they, obviously, all of those things and lifestyle steps, it's a bigger conversation and it takes time, and not every patient wants that information. Some patients are like, just give me the drugs. Whereas some patients are like, I just feel like this is how I felt. I just felt like a medical waste disposal unit. I was just having so many drugs. And I was like, what is going on in my body right now? I don't even know. There was a lot that I wish I'd known around chemo. And then also in radiotherapy, I didn't realise one of the moisturisers I was using, I didn't know this until I interviewed a radiotherapy expert for the book, contains zinc, which is very, very common in moisturisers. Lots of brands use it as a stabiliser, which is metal. So you should not put that on before you go to radiotherapy, because it's like metal.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
Wow.
What happens then?
So it basically attracts more of the radiotherapy rays.
It's like putting a pair of scissors in a microwave.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, don't do that.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Crazy.
And it's such a lot.
Such a lot. And then with surgery, mastectomy surgery, and I had all of my lymph nodes removed as well. And nobody mentioned lymphedema to me, which is a condition that you can get when you have all the lymph nodes removed from under your arm or from anywhere in your body. And the lymph nodes help eliminate the toxins from whichever limb they're attached to.
Yeah.
And once you've had more removed, then any kind of infection in that hand, so if you get a cut or a bite or anything that is any element of infection, it can just make your whole arm swell up massively, and it's really painful. And once you've got lymphedema, it's like irreversible. So it's quite a serious thing, and nobody tells you about this, like, until it happens.
Did it happen to you?
It did, but luckily only very, very mildly. And I have been able to manage it with exercise and like lymphatic massage and wearing this like this very sexy lymphedema kind of glove.
So
there were so many things along the way. So that was one of the things that I wanted to do with the book, and the other thing was help people after treatment,
because
it really kind of knocked me flat. I didn't realise how hard it was going to be at the end of treatment. That was almost the most difficult bit, in a way.
Because that, I think, definitely is, as a clipboard person myself, is I've experienced, is when you're going through the actual trauma, you've got all these things to focus on, you've got to fix the problem, and then when the problem is fixed, then you sort of collapse, don't you? Because then all that work you haven't done with your brain and all that, is that how you found it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it's partly that. I think it's three things. It's partly that you haven't dealt with the kind of emotional trauma of the whole thing. So it hits you at the end. It's also the fact that when you're in treatment, you're doing something and you're like, oh, I'm like... this treatment is horrible, but it's getting rid of the cancer, and you feel like you're taking positive steps. Whereas at the end of treatment, they just kind of say, okay, you need to be wary of recurrence now. These are the things to look out for. Be careful. See you later. Mm. And you're kind of not doing anything. You're just kind of waiting to see if it comes back. So that, I found that really, really hard. And the third thing is that cancer treatment, breast cancer treatment, almost always, not if you're very young, this doesn't always happen, but if you're sort of 40 or over, or in your 30s, probably quite often, it will put you into early menopause, and all the symptoms of menopause are a lot. They're a lot.
Numerous, aren't they? And everyone gets a mix. It's like pick and mix. Sometimes you get more of that sweetie. Sometimes you get none of those sweeties. Like, it's just, you never know what you're going to get.
That's a very generous analogy.
Yeah. Sweets are kind of a nice thing to have. It's like a shit pick and mix.
I was going to say, it's more like a Glastonbury toilet. Yeah. You just don't know what kind of shit
is
in there.
Is there a sanitary towel?
Rummaging around, yeah. And pluck something out. Could be runny, could be solid.
Could be someone's sunglasses. Yeah. Oh, wow. Now coming back to, I guess, the different elements or stages, I guess, that you went through. So you went through the shock. Could you tell us about telling your children, because I'm sure listeners out there, or even indeed telling friends, because I think we're all going to have cancer in our lives, whether we experience ourselves or support our loved ones.
Yeah.
So what was that? What were the sort of initial stages like? Sort of, because it's exhausting telling people shit news, as we've all experienced. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that it's hard because then you're almost a sponge for their reactions.
Yeah.
And you feel like that's an extra layer to carry.
Yeah. Maybe it was almost good in a way that it was the pandemic. So I couldn't see anyone. So I could only tell people on the phone.
Yeah.
So maybe that had the benefit of, me not having to... because you do hear people saying when they get a cancer diagnosis, they tell people about their cancer diagnosis and then they find themselves... comforting the person they've told.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
are you okay?
I basically, after the diagnosis, I remember I went to a really bleak January afternoon. I just walked around the park and I called my mum, my dad, my sister, my closest friends, and just kind of told them all one by one. So I kind of blitzed it. So I did it all at once.
And what was your prognosis at this point? Was this like, were they confident they can cure it? Or was this like...
So when you first get diagnosed, then all they know is there is cancer in the breast.
Yeah.
Then they have to do further tests. So the MRI and CT and bone scans to check that it hasn't spread elsewhere in the body. And they hadn't done those yet with me. So they didn't know for sure what my prognosis was. But because I went into it with my weird optimistic naivety, I was like, this is going to be fine. Mm. So I kind of didn't even entertain the idea that it wouldn't be fine.
Mm.
So everyone I called, I just said, got some news that sounds bad, but it's going to be fine. And just told them in a very matter-of-fact way. And I suppose the worst one was my mum, because she lives on her own in Scotland, so she was so far away.
Yeah.
And I know, not far away compared to Australia, but
it's not a competition. I do win. Yes.
it takes as long to get there.
So yeah, it's really very, very far.
And ER, it does. And so I actually called a friend of hers first and said, would you pop round for like a doorstep?
Technically
weren't meant to pop around to people's houses, but just for like
she was just walking past.
Exactly. And so that she would have someone to talk to, kind of, because I hated the thought of just calling her and telling her I had cancer and then hanging up and her just being on her own in her home, not able to see anyone. But she's very kind of practical as well.
Yeah.
And as soon as we were allowed to travel again, which I think was April,
Yeah, it was a good 4 months, wasn't it? It was hardcore, yeah.
Then I was straight up to Scotland and to see her, so that was nice. But yeah, with the kids, we just decided to be very kind of matter of fact. Because they were, so now they're 6 and nearly 9, so at the time they were 3 and 6. And they were, I had done some Googling, the best way to talk to kids about a cancer diagnosis, in the 2 weeks between them saying, it's probably cancer, but we need to wait for the biopsy results to confirm it, and then getting the biopsy results that confirmed it. So there were 2 weeks where I was kind of thinking, oh, it might be cancer, maybe I should be thinking about how I handle this. So I had done some Googling, and most places said, just be really matter-of-fact and honest with the kids. So so that was the plan. And also, because it was lockdown, we were all four of us were in the house all the time. So we couldn't... And obviously, we were talking about it a lot, and there were appointments, and there was things going on. And I thought, if we tried to hide it from them at all, they would know there was something going on, and they wouldn't know what it was, but they would know it was bad. And I just didn't want there to be any kind of secrecy.
Mm.
So we were just very matter-of-fact.
Yeah.
And also, because my aunt had died of cancer, she had died of ovarian cancer just the year before, and they knew about that. Well, my son is a bit older, so he definitely knew about that, and I just didn't want them to think that my situation was going to be like that at all. So we were really, really clear that, you know, there are lots of different types of cancer. My one is having treatment to cure it.
Yeah.
So...
And you had was it a triple negative diagnosis?
Yes.
Because you in your book you sort of say all the different sort of results and did you say the doctor wasn't very he wasn't very good, basically. He was very blunt and just sort of, oh yeah, that's what you've got. And so you had to do more. You spent a lot of time on Google by the sounds of things wasn't in the last couple of years. But yeah, so that was so you weren't like a deep stage, but it's a bit slightly more tricksier, is that right?
So it's kind of difficult to explain triple negative without explaining the other three types of breast cancer, which are the two types of hormone receptor positive, estrogen positive, progesterone positive, and then there's HER2, which is human epidermal growth factor positive. So those are the three main types of breast cancer that if you get those, there are certain targeted treatments you can have that target those properties of them. Triple negative is just, as it sounds, doesn't have those three things. So it's a type of breast cancer that's characterised by what it isn't. So traditionally, it's been less well understood, and it's been less... The prognosis has been worse because it doesn't have as many treatments. So when the doctor said... He said it's triple negative, and I obviously was clueless, and I said, "What is that, a good thing or a bad thing?" And he was like, "Well, it's not really good or bad. It's just a type of breast cancer." And I was like, "Okay." Obviously, went home and Googled it. Like, what did he think I was going to do? Obviously, I went home and Googled it. And it was, the internet's full of bad news about triple negative breast cancer. But it's because things are changing so fast. Treatments are improving all the time. And actually, one oncologist said to me, my diagnosis 10 years ago would have been a death sentence.
Wow.
So it's incredible the advances they've made. And it's why Google is so, so bad, because you can easily stumble across really, really depressing stories.
Well, if you've read something from 10 years ago, which you can do on the internet very easily, then you'd probably go, fuck.
But even just a few years ago, so even since my diagnosis, treatments have improved for triple negative breast cancer. There's a new drug that wasn't available when I was treated that is available now, which means somebody diagnosed today with my same diagnosis from 2 years ago has 40% less risk of recurrence because of the new drugs.
Amazing.
So it's getting better all the time.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at BollAndBranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I wanted to go back to the thing about telling people and people's reactions. Like, is there... what I'm saying is let's make it about me, as I often do. I've got my friend Alice, who I've known since I was 11, is going through breast cancer now. And, you know, I sometimes don't know what to say to her. I try and check in with her and ask her how she's doing, but I don't want to annoy her. And then, like, what can you say? You know, I know her very well, actually, but I think almost also sometimes it's hard. We've got another friend who I haven't seen for years, or used to work with, and he's got cancer, and our friend was saying, I don't know what to say to him. I don't know. Do I get in touch with him? What do I say? Is there a good and a bad thing to say to people with cancer?
Having spoken to lots of people with breast cancer, that there are certain things that I know tend to annoy people. Personally, for me personally, I think everybody means well, and especially if it's a friend of yours, then you know they're...
It's coming from a good place.
Exactly. And people don't know what to say, and to actually want to be
rude to a person with cancer, you'd have to be an absolute asshole. You're probably not friends. You probably haven't got any friends.
Exactly. So I am quite relaxed about that. I don't mind anything that people say, really.
But what's the worst thing anyone said to you?
I liked when you said in the book, when someone said, oh, you get a free boob job. Fuck off.
Wow.
Fuck me.
Yes.
Or don't worry, your hair will grow back. Things like that. I thought that was a really, it's grim, but it's good to hear that, because people thinking, look at the bright side, you'll get perky tits. Like, yeah. I'm going through cancer. I'm going through treatment. I have to have my boobs lopped off.
Yeah. I mean, luckily, nobody ever said that boob job line to me. Yes. But so many people told me that they've had it said to them. And it's absolutely mental, especially if you have one mastectomy. Mm. Like, your boob, is it not? No, they were definitely better before.
No boob jokes. I mean, yeah.
But yeah, and the hair thing is just very... Oh, it's just so, so depressing, losing your hair. Mm. And I know different things are important to different people. And I do actually have a friend who didn't... I wore the cold cap during chemotherapy to try and retain some of my hair. She didn't at all. She just shaved it off right away. But she was really worried about her nails and her fingernails getting damaged. So it's interesting how different things are important to different people. But for me personally, the hair was just the worst. And that it will grow back.
Yeah.
It was kind of... Obviously, the person saying it is trying to be kind and reassuring, so I totally get it. But it just feels like they're kind of minimising because you already feel like you're being kind of vain and silly for being worried about your hair when you're lucky enough to be having life-saving cancer treatment. And so, I found that quite hard. It's like, obviously, I know hair grows back. Like, I know how hair works.
Yeah.
But I'm still finding this really, really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were some good things or helpful things people say to you? Or sometimes I say to my friend Alice, I don't know what to say. I haven't got anything to say. I know there's nothing I can say that can make this better. And I sometimes don't know if that's a helpful thing to say to yourself or not, but I just think it's better than nothing.
I think it is helpful. And I think also, the most helpful things really are listening, like without trying to fix anything. Because I think women are much better at that, just to make a massive generalisation.
Please do. It's very welcome on this podcast.
I do find men are more likely to kind of listen to you and then go, why don't you try doing blah, blah, blah? Well, why don't you find out about, why don't you ask so-and-so?
Why haven't you done this? And then somehow it's your fault that the problem isn't already fixed.
It's like, oh, I'm tired. Why don't you go to bed early tonight? Well, yeah, but I just need to be able to complain about things.
Mm.
And so I think it's listening without kind of jumping on it and trying to do something about it. Just kind of sitting there and being like, that is really, really shit.
Yeah.
Sorry you're going through it.
Yeah. Don't send me a newspaper article about eating 49 mangoes and then that will cure you if you're
Exactly. So yeah, I would say listening without prejudice, as George Michael would say. No, listening without trying to fix things. And the other thing, it's more like acts rather than things that you say. I was really, really moved during cancer treatment by people, my neighbours would leave like a meal on the doorstep.
Yeah.
It was just so, so kind. Yeah. We would have left so many meals. And friends that live further away would send, like, cook vouchers.
Mm.
And that, like, practical things like that, so lovely. And so those were the things that meant the most, I think.
Yeah. Because, again, and people make me say, first time I went to see Alice, I think I took her some chocolates. And then she was like, well, thanks, but I'm on this, you know, diet now where I'm not... She was doing the whole thing where eating super healthy and not eating any dairy and all this stuff and full vegan and all this. She's like, well, I can't eat these. And I was like, I just didn't think of that. And I felt like a dickhead. But, again, when you've known each other for 35 years, you're like, oh, fuck it.
Yeah.
It'll probably be all right.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is during chemo as well, you get, like your mouth goes really sore and your food doesn't taste very nice. And you get loads of mouth ulcers, and you kind of, it's not, a part of you wants to be really healthy because you know it's going to give the treatment the best chance to work. Mm. But it's not just that, it's also that you just don't enjoy food and drink in the same way as you did before.
Yeah, and now, so as a journalist, can we talk about your wonderful column in The Times? Because you're a journalist and your husband is a journalist as well.
Yes.
So why was it important for you to share that? I mean, obviously, the money's great. She did it for money.
I don't think she's even got cancer. I've been listening to this podcast called Scamander, which is amazing. Like this woman in America who pretended she had cancer for like years. She's got like loads of money. And I'm like, let's get real, Rosamund. We've brought you here. Prove it.
Oh my God.
Show us your boobs.
Busted. Yeah. Busted.
You've got loads of hair. What the fuck are you talking about? Sorry, Ellen, you carry on.
Her excellent column. So you documented, because I remember, and obviously, and you shared it so beautifully on social media, your hair loss and being very real about it. But also, what was beautiful is that Jonathan shared his experience, because I think, as Ellie said, and she's supporting Alice so beautifully as well, you can't have cancer in a vacuum. It's going to infect.
I had to empty my Hoover the other day. I'm pretty sure it's got cancer. shit in there is absolutely disgusting and definitely alive.
Jesus. Thank God you didn't infect your husband. It's very kind of you. No touching. So can you tell everyone about your column?
So it's, as you say, I am a freelance journalist.
Mm.
And as a twist of fate, my diagnosis came in the week that I left my staff job. So I was deputy editor of Graxia, handed in my notice during the pandemic to go freelance so that I could, you know...
Great, no sick pay. Yeah. Yay!
Woohoo! Oh, God.
Jesus!
Literally, the week I had like 2 days of work left. And I remember texting my boss, Hattie, the editor at Graxia, texting her and I was like, so do you mind if I don't... it wasn't even coming in because obviously it was all on Zoom, pandemic. Yeah. I was like, do you mind if I don't do the last couple of days? I've just been diagnosed with cancer. She was like, fucking hell, what? Mm. Obviously, you don't come back to work. Are you okay? So they're very kind and very understanding, but I had left my job, so there was no sick pay.
Ugh,
and
fuck.
I know, it wasn't the shiny new freelance life that I was anticipating.
No.
So I have to say the column in the Sunday Times style was definitely... I was being paid for it, which was one of the main perks. unlike Jonathan, because he's on staff at the Sunday Times. He didn't get paid for it.
Oh my. Okay. Thank you, Jonathan.
But yeah, like you say, it was amazing to tell his side of it, because when people talk about cancer, they talk about the person with cancer. And actually, he was going through, oh my God, this... We've talked about how it was in the pandemic and it was homeschooling. He was doing all of that stuff and while also trying to find someone to look after the kids so he could drive me to chemo And it, like, it was just a lot. Mm. And I had like 15 people a day asking how I was. I was constantly, I was like fending off texts from people asking how I was.
Yeah.
And he was just like getting on with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it was really good to have his side of it. And we got so many emails and DMs and messages from people saying thank you so much for kind of saying the other side of it. Because whether it's a partner or a parent or a child or a friend or whoever is the kind of main carer of the person with cancer.
Yeah.
It's like they kind of, they need support as well.
Because you have done, sorry, just to divert, you have done columns or an article with him before. Because I remember when you did the vasectomy article. Sorry, I'm just going to make it about your husband's penis. Just for a minute, just a side. But you, yeah, that was amazing. And that had a massive response, I remember. Not the vasectomy, yes. But the article.
I know, poor Jonathan. He had the snip and then I got cancer with the medical menopause. So he needn't have bothered.
Oh,
pointless snip.
Oh, I was going to say, I hope he wasn't snippy about it.
Hey!
So what was the vasectomy column about then? Was that
oh, wait, I mean, was it an article, sorry.
Yeah. He wrote about, I actually didn't write, that was just him. He wrote about his vasectomy, about the experience of having it and why he was doing it. He's a big advocate for the vasectomy. He's always telling his friends they should get it done.
I mean, both of you have got amazing timing. Can we just say? Maybe the cancer has. Maybe it's another hilarious joke by our old friend Cancer.
So from the column, was that something that inspired you to write the book then? And then, and obviously you've gone on to do your fabulous Substack. Well. So how did that all kind of come about?
So it came about because my editor at HarperCollins, well, she's my editor now. I didn't know her then, but she emailed me out of the blue, having just returned to work after a year off with breast cancer.
Right.
So she had said, I obviously read loads of, she works in publishing, so she had read loads of books trying to find a book to help her while she was going through breast cancer treatment.
Mm.
And she was like, I didn't find the book that I wanted, will you? But I did like your columns.
Yeah.
So can we have a coffee? So,
yes, please.
So I went to go and meet her and we sort of came up with the idea of this book because so many of the breast cancer books out there are either kind of memoirs, mm-hmm. which are wonderful, but not as kind of useful and practical.
Yeah.
Or quite sort of sciencey books written by doctors that can be quite impenetrable. So since having breast cancer, I often get text messages from people like who I don't know, but who are kind of in the vicinity of my friends or mums at my kids' school, who've been like, hope you don't mind, so-and-so gave me your number, I've just been diagnosed with breast cancer, would you mind going for a coffee? And they just have loads of questions.
Yeah,
that sounds exhausting.
Yeah.
I have it with the divorce. I get
do you? Friends, you get the friends, same.
Yeah, my friend has gone through it. How do you do mediation? How do you do that? Anyway.
Yeah.
I just get, how do I set up my child's PlayStation 5 so it can't look
at it? We all have our cross to bear, Ellie.
We're all living a difficult life.
Well, Helen and I had to write books so that we could say, buy the fucking book.
Yeah.
I'll just do a tweet.
So yeah, it's that kind of thing of just somebody you know that's been through it who's just explaining it in a very matter-of-fact way that is not very convoluted or complicated, which is just the stuff you actually need to know. And we sort of thought of it as a bit like one of those pregnancy books where it's like what to expect at each stage and down to what to pack in your hospital bag. That's the whole That was the ethos of the book.
Basically, you wrote a book to avoid having to have coffee with people you don't really know, which is the sort of solution that I, as a clipboard person, also would embrace. I think that makes perfect sense.
That's the short version.
Yeah. But now you're sort of, your cats are free, and it's sort of wonderful to see you obviously, you know, daily on social media and talking about your sort of new life. I guess, what has cancer given you, or what? How do you see life now?
Well, I would say on a some kind of psychological point of view, it's so hard to say without sounding like a mega live, love, laugh cliche of, you know, every...
Well, you might not want to use my downstairs bathroom because you'll find that painted on some driftwood. Next to the dream catcher. Of the sparkly toilet seat.
You're in a safe space, Rosalind. That's what you're saying. You're in a safe space. Go on your journey. Go on.
Manifest some more words or some shit.
Oh, there you go.
But yeah, it does give you a sense of the important things in life. It does make you sort of reassess your values, and it does help you feel like if you're, you know, an activity that you might previously have thought of as kind of drudgery, like cooking dinner for the kids and getting them in the bath, it kind of helps you reframe it as, this is not something that I have to do, it's something that I get to do, because I'm still here.
Not dead, yeah.
Not dead. I'm not dead, so I still get to do this, and I still get to see these stupid little faces who won't shut up.
Mm. How much did you or do you think about death? Like, was it another thing you kind of sort of, right, well, we'll park that over there, because we'll just, it's going to be all right, or did it...
I definitely parked it at the beginning, and then at the end, I think the big turning point for me was when... So I went to go and see a surgeon. It wasn't my normal surgeon. It's a different surgeon. And right at the end, and I was kind of waiting for that moment where they go, that's it now. Like, it's done. You've got the all clear. You're free to go.
You completed the video game.
Yeah. And I saw this surgeon who just, I guess she hadn't, it was someone that I hadn't seen before. And she was kind of looking down my notes and she was a bit like, oh dear. And she was like, oh yeah, triple negative, lymph node involvement, not multifocal, which meant more than one tumour in the breast. You didn't have a complete response to chemo. She was kind of listing all the bad things about my cancer. And then she was like, oh yeah, your risk of recurrence is, it's comparatively high, so you have to be extremely vigilant for signs of recurrence. And I was like, oh, okay, so what are... I was so naive. I was like, oh, so what would recurrence be? Would it be like a lump in the other breast? And she was like, no. If it's going to recur, it will more likely be elsewhere in the body, so most likely your brain, lungs...
How do you check for a lump in your brain?
Liver, or... what's the other one?
Bone, blood?
Bones.
Yeah.
Yeah, blood is another one. Yeah. I think those four are the most common.
Mm.
And she said, so the symptoms are kind of aches and pains, like back pain, shoulder pain, headaches...
That just sounds like being 45.
I know! If it's in your lungs, you might have a bit of a cough... And, and in your liver, I was like, what about symptoms for the liver? And she was like, maybe fatigue?
Fuck! So you just feel slightly anxious the whole time.
My liver is constantly fatigued, but I've had too much Whispering Angel this summer.
Oh. Exactly. So I basically walked out of there thinking, and this was the other thing she said, because then I was like, okay, so if it does reoccur, would I have to have chemo again to kind of treat it? And she was like, oh, well, if it does recur elsewhere in your body, it won't be treatable. It would just be a case of managing it until you die. Oh,
Rosamund, fuck me.
Which is
wow.
With grade 3 triple negative breast cancer, it's kind of sooner rather than later. You're not going to be one of these people that lives for like 15 years with secondary cancer. It's going to be probably more like 2 years. So I was like, okay, so there's basically a 40% chance that I'll be dead in like the next 5 years. And that was the first time that I realised the kind of black and white reality of that. Because I had, up until that point, and this was right at the end of treatment, so really...
Jesus.
Throughout the whole thing, I'd really
been a bit
like...
You'll be fine. Actually, here's the actual thing.
Yeah.
You thought that was like, the end of the film. And you're like, oh no, there's a fucking sequel.
Exactly. A really, really dark sequel. It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's like, you know, there are some dark bits, but it's quite jaunty. And then there's the fucking Temple of Doom.
Next
episode. And it's like, what did I sign up for?
Whoa.
Not this.
No.
So, that was when, and I think that coupled with all the menopause symptoms, which also nobody had said to me, you're going to have early menopause. So it was one of the side effects on the mega list of chemo side effects.
Yeah.
One of them was like, your periods might stop. But nobody had said, you know, you're going to have...
sweats and
all the
rage.
Things that come with it. Yeah, the rage and like fear and anxiety and mood swings and all that stuff that comes with it as well.
Mm.
And I was like, I think I'm actually going mad. Like I had I had like the meltdown.
Mm, fair enough.
What was the meltdown? How did it manifest?
Oh, it was, so I started having panic attacks for the first time in my life. I've always been, as I said earlier, very rationable.
Yes. That's your next book.
Yeah. And but I just started having these weird meltdowns and just over really silly, insignificant things as well. But I think I was just so kind of scared and anxious all the time. And it took me probably... It took a long time to, first of all, acknowledge that I needed help with that. And then I did get therapy, which is first time in my life I've had therapy as well. I started embracing all of these things that I might previously have rolled my eyes at a little bit. I was like, therapy, yes. Energy healing, sign me up.
Yeah.
Felt like I would do anything. And also, it launched this big kind of health kick. I mean, I kind of thought of myself as a healthy person. As you know, I'm a mindful drinker. And
three by three. Three by three.
And I eat pretty healthily. I didn't do any exercise, though. I didn't do any. I just didn't think I needed to. And which sounds silly, obviously. Everyone knows exercise is good for you. But I kind of thought if you're not overweight or you're not, or you don't feel unfit, then you don't really need to. And I just felt like a healthy person. And then it was only really when I was researching for the book that I came across this research. This research makes it sound like it's one study. It's hundreds of studies with hundreds of thousands of women. Breast cancer, for women after breast cancer. Exercise reduces your risk of recurrence by half.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Fucking hell.
So like it's cut 40% to 20% in your case then. I don't know. I'm not good at maths.
Yeah, probably. Well, it's a good thing anyway.
So some of the research says it reduces it by 30 to 40%. Right. One study said it reduces it by 60%. So basically it reduces it by a lot. So it's really, really important. And I've got into exercise. I would say that has been quite a big change because that has also been very good for my mental health as well. Yeah. The old mental health. It helps with that. I feel like...
Let me guess, cold water swimming? Come on. You're a woman in her 40s.
If you had to think of a person that would do cold water swimming, you would probably say me.
Right.
After everything.
Excuse me, I've got coffee. Yeah, go, sorry.
Oh, gosh, you've got cancer.
Cold water swimming, it's just not my bag.
No, I can't do it. They lost me at the word cold, Rosamund.
I don't like being cold. I don't like having reeds go past my leg. I don't like being anywhere that's... I just don't like it. And interestingly, my book editor is very, very into it.
Of course she is.
And when I filed the first draft of the book, she was like, I think cold water swimming is a massive omission. It's it's really, really important because there are all these... I mean,
people don't talk enough about it.
No.
There is all this research about how it's good for your immunity, and anything that's good for your immunity reduces your risk of cancer recurrence. Like, it is, there is, the evidence is there. So I did include it in the end, but I included it as an example of the fact that not everything is for everyone, because that is not for me.
How are you feeling now?
So I feel a lot better now, significantly better. After my disgust meltdown, I had therapy, I got into doing exercise, and the process of writing the book was incredibly cathartic, and also it just felt really practical and hopeful and kind of optimistic and galvanising, because I interviewed all these experts about things that you can do to reduce your risk of recurrence and reduce your risk of getting cancer in the first place. That's kind of the whole second half of the book is about future-proofing your life, really. And there is so much you can do. I mean, nobody can ever say that you've taken away all of your risk of cancer, because the causes of cancer are just too varied. Yeah. There are too many of them, and nobody understands them all fully. So you could do everything perfectly and still get cancer.
Yeah.
But there is a lot you can do to reduce your risk. So I feel like doing all those things, you know, doing the strength training and drinking less alcohol and eating the veg and, you know, getting a good night's sleep, avoiding the cold water swimming.
That's key, but it's really bad for you.
Yeah. I feel like they're helping me feel like I'm doing something that's reducing my risk of recurrence, and also just making me feel better. Improves your mood overall.
Oh, so your book is called Reconstruction?
Yes, it's for anybody going through it, their friends and loved ones and supporters. I think it will help anyone. And actually, the second half of it that's about future-proofing your body is kind of for anyone, really. Mm-hmm. Anyone who doesn't want to get cancer, and to be honest, I wouldn't recommend it.
I'm not sure anyone does, do they? Do they?
No.
There's weirdos out there, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. There's a lid for every pot. Yeah. It's a beautifully written book, obviously, I'm just going to have it on the shelf. It's just, you know, it's
one of those... in case you get cancer.
Well, just, it's just, you know, it's just a really great book to dip in and out of, and you know, and all those sort of things. I just think it's, yeah, it's brilliant. So congratulations.
Is there much about smoking in your book? How good is that for cancer?
So in terms of breast cancer, smoking.
I don't smoke for tits, all right? It's quite a niche thing.
I mean, also, smoking causes cancer, I feel
it does, doesn't it?
It's not new news.
No. I fucking know this!
Really,
I'm going to write a book called How to Smoke Less. I'm just going to have 3 cigarettes 3 times a week.
Mindful smoking.
Mindful smoking, exactly. There's a niche for that. I am going to give out one day.
She's not going to give out.
It makes me happy. And that and reduces my stress.
So serial killers get joy from murdering people. That doesn't mean it's a good idea.
What a lovely analogy.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Both involve death.
We obviously really agree on this one, Rosamund. Sorry, you're in the middle.
Sorry
to drag you through the marital
not
problem.
Wanting you to die or to have to go to the fucking hospital.
I know it comes from love.
So yes, reconstruction is great. And also highly recommend Rosamund's other book, Mindful Drinking, which I've read about 3 times actually, and it's brilliant. So yes, as I've banged on about on my own podcast, I like to drink less sometimes.
Oh
well, there we go. Now do we have a Scummy Mummy confession to end with?
I was going to. My Scummy Mummy confession is on Saturday night. I had a very nice time with you, Ellie Gibson. We had
a lovely time.
We very rarely get to hang out just because, you know, often it's when we're on tour or doing work or whatever. So we went back to my place and it was my street party. And
you make it sound like your street threw a party for you because you're back from
the
tour.
The Scummy Mummies are finally
here. The Head of Thorn Street Party. Yeah. Woo!
Anyway,
like the combination.
As always, I did very little to help. I bought some sausages and other people cooked them, and then I arrived and everyone was pissed and lovely. Anyway, so but I had some edible weed, which was lovely, like in a gummy. So I was quite high, and then I was drinking. I was just feeling the love. I was having a really nice time. I was by myself. No children were around. Anyway, I ended the night and you guys came back and, you know, ordering your Uber. And I thought, I know what, I'll have a Bailey's. I don't know how long it was dusty. Who knows?
This is after me and Pete left.
I had a warm Bailey's on a warm night after drinking. I thought, that's a lovely little nightcap after, you know, having some weed
Do you think every bottle of the Baileys is dusty?
Yeah.
I think it's compulsory. They're made like that in the factory. Yeah. They come out.
Anyway, I went to bed going, oh, I'm just all loved up. I'm really happy. And the other day, I just said to Ellie, you know, I haven't spewed in ages.
Babe.
And then I just got the sweats. I got, you know, when you start salivating, and I was like, damn it! And then I just did a very creamy Bailey's infused
Bailey's whitey. That's a nightmare.
So there's my healthy living for you, everyone. But yeah, I had a spew.
I'm sorry.
And then the next day I was just a bit sweaty, and I went to Blair with my boyfriend and a couple of his friends, and we were all sitting together, and they're all Spanish, so they were speaking Spanish. He said, "Oh, do you want to sit here? Can you move? Because I, you know, so I can sit next to you, so I can talk to you." But I said, "I can't. You can't sit in my seat. I'm so hot and sweaty. I've sweated like a little pool of sweat at the Blur concert. Nobody needs to sit in my seat."
Woo!
Yeah. So that's my double confession.
Life. Yeah.
Girls who like boys, who like girls.
Who like sweat.
We did have
a lovely time. My confession is related to Saturday night, actually. We did have a lovely time at your street party, and I said to Pete the next day, I was also feeling that, and I said to him, and I hadn't had a gummy, but I was also feeling that, I was like, you know, it's like, because what we have as a double act, it is like a marriage in a lot of ways. We hardly ever have sex, you know. But it is like a marriage in a lot of ways, and you sometimes need a date night. You need an activity together where you do a nice thing that isn't to do with the kids, or in our case, work or the business. And so we'd had a great time. Such a great time that night Pete and I came home and had a little bit of grown-up time, rumpy pumpy. And then the next morning, Sunday morning, we had fucking swimming lessons at 9:30. Made it in the rain. We made it to swimming. And, you know, you have to sit there by the top side of the pool. And I turned and looked at him, and his face was covered in gold glitter. Because I hadn't taken my show makeup off before we'd had the rumpy pumpy. and he'd obviously revoltingly not washed properly. So he was sitting in the swimming pool at 9 a.m.
Shining bright like a diamond.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh my god. So yes, it was an adventure. Rosamund,
I mean, we've you weren't at the bar high
on Saturday night, but do you have a scummy confession to share with us?
Probably my confession is probably about lying to my children. Oh. It's funny when we were talking about telling them about the cancer, and I was like, you have to be honest. It's really important to be honest all the time. On a day-to-day basis, I lie to my children all the time. And it's funny when you mentioned swimming then. My daughter's swimming this week. We've gotten a bad habit of saying this. When she's like, on a Saturday morning, time for swimming. And we go, oh, yeah, it's cancelled. Yeah, it's cancelled this week. Sorry, swimming's been cancelled again. So, because we just can't be fucked to go. And,
fair enough, mate.
And I also got into this habit of whenever Jonathan goes out, the kids have still got grow clocks.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
those ones that light up in the mornings. And and what I do when Jonathan goes out is I put them both forward by an hour.
Oh,
and
so
they think it's like 8 p.m. when it's actually 7. Or they think it's 7:30 when it's actually 6:30.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, bedtime. And I've been doing this for years, since they were very little. And now, obviously, my son is nearly 9. And the other night, he was in the bath, and I was like, okay, time to go out the bath, come on, it's after 7 already. And he was like, how can it be when we were having dinner downstairs a minute ago, it was 6. How can it be after 7?
Oh, no. Like, damn it.
Rumble.
Foiled.
He's learned to tell the time, not on my watch. Oh. Somebody has taught him how to tell the time.
No.
And
no.
Now I can't do my job. Well, obviously I was like, well, I think time flies. Oh.
I'm sure we had a confession at the show once where it was bedtime when the Archers came in the radio.
Yeah.
So they recorded, this is in the 80s, they recorded the Archers theme tune and then just played it.
Oh, wow.
To get into bed. Burn up, but off you fuck.
Pavlov's dog. Yeah. Hear that noise at bedtime.
Oh, the fucking grow clock. My kids are 12 and 9, and I was like sorting out their room the other day, so I unplugged the grow clock. Right, we sent that to a charity shop or whatever. And they were bereft. They were like, no. And I was like, you're fucking 12.
Look at the time.
You're practically vaping. Why do you need a grow clock? Fuck's sake. It's got to go. So I said, oh, I'll just put it away for a bit and give it another 6 months. They'd have forgotten about it.
Yeah, pop it down in the cupboard of doom.
Oh, excellent. Well, it's the end of the podcast, isn't it? Thank you so much for coming on again, Rosamund. Oh. Lovely to see you.
Thank you so much for having me.
We haven't talked about Well. Quickly give that a marvellous plug because it is excellent.
Oh, thank you. So, yeah, Well is my newsletter on Substack that I started. It's not about cancer, but it's basically about how to live well for as long as possible. So it's all the things that I learned while writing the book about how to reduce your risk of recurrence and to reduce your risk of getting cancer in the first place, and also how to be healthy in lots of other ways. So we've obviously talked about drinking, we've talked about bones, talked about strength training, talked about sleep. I feel like there are lots more menopause, talked about everything. So it's every week. Well.
Lovely recommendations for books and things to watch. Yes. And just the whole shaboo.
Oh, well, that is it. Yes, we're on tour like we always are, so go to scummymummies.com.
Cambridge, Bath, Henley-on-Thames. Mm. A lovely place to go. Leamington Spa. Please come to Leamington
and
Spa.
And Corby.
Nice. Yeah.
Thank you for coming on again, Rosamund. Lovely to have you. Thank you for listening. Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. What she wanted, and what I also wanted, was a book that was kind of warm and relatable and written just by...
Sorry, we're in South East London.
Do you mind? We're trying to have a conversation about cancer. Fuck's sake, park your van somewhere else, you prick. Hope you don't get it.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.